time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Oh, there he is.
It's been a few weeks. Sorry for the delay. I've been on a little vacation. I've been overseas. I was in Ireland with my lovely wife. Wow. And we're back to talk about Dodger baseball, Brandon.
Oh, my gosh. Jesse, my Irish King Roe. I can tell by your lack of a tan that you are in the Emerald Isle. Wow, it's good to see you.
Wow, take it easy, bro.
You're saying, pretty sweet.
Yeah, you're saying, man. I'm not coming back with that vacation glaze,
dude,
that like nice sunburn? Nah, no.
You look like you had some cold Guinness and some corned beef and cabbage, brother.
I did.
Tell me I'm wrong.
You know, no, I did. And, you know, let me say before we start, it's a beautiful country, amazing place. I highly recommend everybody to go. You know, we rented a car. We drove around. I drove from Dublin all the way around the country. Did not go up to the north. Didn't go to Belfast. Fuck fascism, man. No, I'm joking. But I didn't go up there. But did kind of see everything. And one thing about going around places like countries like that, you do realize that, like, when you go from Dublin, which is very multicultural, you can find a lot of things to eat. The more inland that you go, it really is just Irish food. There's not like a lot of not a selection, so it really was just Guinness and Jameson and all that. But you know, I had a great time. I didn't have a great time with the Dodgers just blowing games when I was over there. I mean, they lost some brutal games. Like, they lost two no hitters while I was over there.
Pretty just, brutal.
Yeah.
Jesse and I were in light contact. Right as he was leaving for Ireland, I was just coming back from a camping trip. So we were in a little loose contact. We tried to get an episode out for you, but just couldn't get it. Couldn't get the stars to align. But boy, was it tough to watch that Yamamoto no-hitter slip away into what was the worst loss I think Dodger fans have had outside of a World Series loss, right? In years. Jesse, let me tell you, that was rock bottom for the team, and I think that was where these Dodgers truly became dangerous. They said, enough is enough. We got our fucking horses coming back. Pardon my French. Muncy, Edmund, the arms, you all know. All it took was a couple of injuries to our starting catcher and our backup and a little guy named Ben Rorvert.
Ben Rorvert. Hey, come on, Brandon. Put some respect on his name, dude. Yeah.
Sorry, dude. But yeah. Ben is just getting this pitching staff to just fucking, excuse my French, but we're just K-ing everybody, baby. Snell had an 11K game. And Glasnow's last one wasn't that great.
He's also,
but aside from that, it's been incredible, man.
He also has had some big hits. Like, he had a bases clearing double the other day in San Francisco. He's doing his part while Smith and Rushing are on the shelf. But yeah.
Oh yeah.
To your point,
Ben, I gotta say, Jess, I went to a game last week against the Rockies, and Benny Boy comes out to a pretty like amazing walk up song, and I don't know who it's by, but it's da 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 da, and I don't know if anybody else recognized that, but it reminds me, I think it's a song from Loveline when they would play the game called Stinky Pinky, where they would like say a sexual phrase that was like I don't know what kind of word, but yeah.
Is it Hold the Line song by Toto?
No, it is not. That is Hold the Line. Bow now.
Why is it? So here's the thing. I'm gonna go.
It's like
a
saxophone. It's like a very sexy sax man type.
Okay.
Feel.
I'm gonna go on a little side tangent here. AI fucking sucks, man. Like on Google AI overview is so consistently wrong about things. Like I just googled Ben Rortvedt walkout song and it says it's "Hold the Line" by Toto. This information comes from the Los Angeles Dodgers official list of walk-up music for the 2025 season. But you're telling me that's not the walkout song.
It wasn't last Wednesday or whatever when I went.
Yeah, no. AI overview, I don't know. They need to get better at this. They need to update things better. It shouldn't be incumbent upon me to fix your product, you know. Anyways, that's my
I love that. But you know what, Jesse, speaking of it not being incumbent on you to fix this product, these damn Dodgers have just gone out and fixed it all on their own. I know I've gotten a little ahead of myself and I've chased my spinning tail talking about the pitching, talking about hot Ben Rortvedt, but Jesse.
Rortvedt.
I can't say it. I'm trying my best. Rortvedt, dude. I'm sorry. But Jesse, Mookie Betts is officially back, baby.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
I mean, this was the biggest story all year for me. Was if Mookie Betts keeps hitting like this, it's a problem because he's hitting in the number two spot. The Dodgers were clearly unwilling to like really move him back in the lineup while he was struggling. Let's not make no mistake. He was like struggling, like having
Jesse,
the worst.
People were considering like, hey, is this the beginning of the end? Is this the fall off of Mookie Betts? Is this the end of this offensive powerhouse era of his career?
It's no doubt, like, he's entering the decline of his prime. No question about it. But, like, is he entering, like, the true decline where, like, he just falls off, right?
Yeah.
Or is he just going to be, like, really, really good rather than really great? You know, what version of Mookie are we getting? And it was just bad all year. It was like, we're getting a bad player who's playing amazing defense at shortstop.
Yeah.
Just saving his value as a baseball player. By playing the most demanding position on the field and doing it at an elite level. He's playing great defense, and now all of a sudden, he's, like, fully back. He, like, just, you know, I love Mookie Betts. I have a bone to pick with him right now because he basically ended my fantasy baseball season. You know, I played against him this week or last week in my fantasy baseball playoffs, and he went off. He went ape shit. He had like three or four home runs. He had a grand slam. And that was all she wrote for me, man. All thanks to fucking Mookie Betts. He edged me out because of it. But you know what? I gladly take that as a Dodger fan because they swept the Rockies and then they beat 1-2 or 3 against the Giants because of it. So I couldn't be happier for him. And it's just so good to have him back. Let's go over his numbers a little bit here. Cause since the beginning of August, he has basically close to like a 900 OPS. In August, he had a 731 OPS. In August, he had a 760, I believe. I have to look at his numbers really quick. August, he had a 762. September, so far, in 15 games, 13 games, 1.16 OPS.
Unreal. Unreal. He was the player of the week this week. Going 12 for 26 or something like that. Something unreal.
This is the right time for Mookie to figure it out, man. I mean, like, I've always said if Mookie goes, the team goes. Because Shohei is going to be great. Freddie's going to be great. But Mookie has, like, this, he's really good. Or he has this other level, you know, where he really, really, like, He just does things on a baseball field that like nobody else can really do. And
he's got a little bit of that dog in him, Jess. And what I mean by that, and I've already said it twice, I'm going to use all our F-bombs for the whole episode. I'm sorry, but he's got that fuck you in him. LA basketball fans, you know, Kobe Bryant fans, you'll recognize it as that Mamba mentality. But that's how I identify it. You've seen it all throughout the year, you know, last season. Walking Shohei to get to Mookie. Well, that pisses him off, right?
Yep.
Well, we saw that in game one of the World Series. Well, you know what? Why don't we walk Mookie this time? We'll take the injured Freeman. And how did that end up? You know, these guys got chips on their shoulders. They're the MV3 for a reason. And Mookie is the middle of that of that sandwich, right? What's the best part of an Oreo, baby? It's the cream. Let's go.
Mookie's yeah, except this is like a reverse. This is like a reverse Oreo.
Look,
you know, but it's like a
colorblind, brother. I don't see the colors of an Oreo. Yeah,
it's a multicultural Oreo. You
He's the linchpin, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I got you. I'm taking it in a direction it does not need to be taken.
Dude, don't you do that to me. But Jesse, it's been pretty special. Like you'd mentioned, he's playing in out of this world shortstop, you know, going from right field to shortstop. It's something that we just haven't seen. I can't name a player that's had this kind of success, especially after the levels of, you know, just despair we've seen him at the plate this whole year, from losing all that weight to seeming like he just didn't have power anymore, to not catching up on fastballs, to having an unreal strikeout stretch. You know, his strikeout clip was super high. That has been back to, like, I think some of the lowest in his career over the last, six weeks.
I think it was the on-base percentage too that was like really making it difficult to watch Mookie, because he wasn't even getting on base. Like, his on base percentage was the lowest it's ever been. And, you know, great players seem to find ways to get on base when they're struggling, like still draw some walks. And he wasn't even doing that, which was tough. But, you know, even you mentioned him getting sick and losing all that weight. Even after that, to start the year, he was actually, he came out like out of a cannon. He was hitting homers. Yeah. He was looking great. But it really caught up to him like a few weeks into the season, where you could just tell that the strength was like, it needed to be a perfect barrel or he wasn't hitting it past the warning track.
I'm sorry. I just want to interject just even on a personal note. Mookie lost his stepdad this year. You know, I saw some Dodger fans kind of callously scoff at that on like Dodger Twitter, but you know, that's a stepdad. That's, you know, he's super close with his mom. So obviously that's going to affect her losing, you know, the love of her life. So there's a human element, Jess. And that's what I wanted to touch on. And it's like, we talk a lot about when a pitcher is physically out of sync or when a hitter is physically out of sync, but let's not forget what David Ortiz gave, you know, in terms of advice to Mookie last playoff season. And that was to bring his smile back, right? To be that guy that pisses off other players because he's having such a good time. And when Mookie's having a good time, there's nobody on the field that can outplay him. And I think we're seeing Mookie Betts, you know, bring that smile back out and, you know, have that good time. And that's what we need, brother.
I couldn't agree more. I kind of feel like that's happened a little bit with Kershaw this year too. It seems like Kershaw's had a little bit of that, like, joy come back this year, because he's just happy to be out there because he had the shoulder injury. He wasn't able to pitch last season in the playoffs. He wasn't able to be a part of a World Series team. So I think that joy is there for him. And when Kershaw is happy, he's at his best. You know, he's angry, obviously. He's got Mamba mentality in him, but he's also just, you know, he's happy and he's pitching freely. And I think that it's showing. And so for Mookie in particular, that's such a big part of his game. It's like his confidence is, I mean, look, this is obviously kind of just fucking anybody could say this. So this is basically just super cliche, but confidence, you know, is everything in sports. And Mookie's confidence has been noticeably low all season long. And just to see it back and to see he looks dangerous up there now. Yep. Like, he looks like he's going to hit
dangerous
the ball.
Dangerous is the right key now. Word, man. And that's the thing. It's like, how many times have we seen guys not really, you know, take confident ABs at the dish? You know, Pajes has gone through it. We've seen Teo finally start to emerge out of it. You know, Muncy before the glasses. Now Max can see. But God, I hate those Giants. We'll talk about that.
I know. Muncy's like the most unlucky player this year. We'll get to that. But just a quick note on Mookie before we move on. This is his September so far. 56 plate appearances. He's 20 for 52. He has 9 runs, 15 RBIs, 4 homers in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 games. He's hitting .385 with a .430 on base and a .730 slug. Dude is like, this is the right time of year to figure it out. So if he carries this into October, I would say buy a low on those Dodgers World Series odds, because they've taken a little bit of a dip, if I'm not mistaken, in the past month. But I think that this is like the best value you're going to get, because I think that they are starting to click, and it's also showing in their starting pitching. Brandon,
dude, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say, look, if you're going to try and buy low, buy now, because like you were just talking about, the Dodgers pitching staff has gone on a bit of a roll, my G. Mm-hmm. Starters have gone 6 innings, 2 runs or less in 6 of their last 8. Including Kershaw going 5 2/3, 2 runs. I know he got tagged up against the Giants in his last start. But, hey, we're going to cut him some slack. The King carried us in August. He deserved one blow-up start. In September, he's 100 years old. All right, chill
out. Dude, the pitching's been unreal. And, you know, we knew that this was a possibility so long as the –
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Team was healthy. Well, they are like, other than Roky Sasaki, who is healthy, but he is just doing a rehab stint right now. The Dodgers pitching staff is fully healthy right now with their top guys. Snell is healthy. Glasnow is healthy. Kershaw is healthy. Shohei is healthy. And Yamamoto is healthy. And Yamamoto is on the best stretch of his Dodger career right now. Now, it's not showing up with wins, unfortunately, because the Dodgers are just kind of blowing games for him. But he was brilliant in his last start. Brilliant the start before against the Orioles, where he was one out away from a fucking no-hitter. And then, you know, obviously gave up the home run to Jackson Holliday. And then the team completely imploded. We don't need to get into that. We're going to stay positive here. The point is, Yamamoto is on a tear right now, an absolute tear. But Tyler Glasnow, we knew that this guy was like a difference maker for the team if he could just stay on the field, dude, because he has had trouble staying on the field. He almost had a no-hitter in his most recent in 2 starts ago, and then yesterday's start, or in his most recent start, I forget if it was yesterday or what, but 6 innings, gave up 2 runs, pitched great. He has a 3 ERA with a 1 whip. He has been awesome. And
and if you love arm extension, guess what? Best extension in the league.
Best. He's in the 100th percentile of extension. I just love that stat. I didn't even know that was a thing. It's an amazing.
It makes me, I'm like, is this a swimmer stat? They got gorgeous backs, but
It's just him. It's him lunging at the plate. He has the longest extension from the mound to where his foot is planted. So it's like with his height and his length, he's basically like he's throwing the ball from like 51 feet away. You know,
that's pretty crazy. That is crazy when you put it like that. Because when I hear extension, I'm just kind of thinking like, oh, where is? I don't know where his like release is, where after his like front foot plants. But no, you're right, dude. That's actually pretty gnarly, dude.
Yeah. So it's just a huge advantage. And so if he stays healthy, what a weapon he is. And Blake Snell too. I know he didn't have a great start his last time out, but he's been really good since coming back from his IL stint. So the point is like everything is clicking at the right time for the Dodgers. If this team can just stay healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if we see them win. How many games do we have left here? What are we?
I think like 14 left, about 2 weeks.
I wouldn't be surprised to see them go like 10-5, 10-4, whatever it is. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And and then they're going to be rolling into the postseason. Now, the question is playoff seeding. We are playing the Phillies. We're going to get to that in a second. But Brandon, what do you think changed? Because Do you think that there's possibility that the Dodgers maybe had some like help from like witches like the Mariners did?
Well, Jesse, I love that. I love that you brought that up, dude. I do think there is a little brouhaha brewing. I think there is a little magic in the air, Pa. I don't know that we got to go to Etsy for this one. I think we could more pinpoint it back to that standing O that Mookie got. I think sometimes you just need to feel that love. And that's the magic, right? That's like the magic of music or whatever. But boy, that story of witchcraft in Seattle turning their season around, I mean, it kind of makes me think that maybe somebody in the Conforto family maybe hired that same witch to cast a spell on our Dodger legend, put some respect on his name, Michael Conforto. Oh my God, he's at the Mendoza line. My king.
Hit it
3-for-4 in his last game against the Giants. Incredible.
Hitting over 200 on the season. I mean, bravo, sir. Well done. Yeah, for people who don't know what we're talking about, apparently there is a Mariners fan who saw that the Mariners were struggling and then hired a witch on Etsy for $15.99 to basically cast a spell to help the Mariners win games, and they've won 9 in a row ever since. They're 9-0 since that day. So, you know, maybe somebody did something for Conforto. Maybe somebody did cast a spell for the Dodgers' health, because the injury bug is kind of starting to figure itself out a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised. Or maybe your boy here visited those fairies over in Ireland. And, you know, maybe because I... You know, my wife did lose a gold earring in the forest when we went hiking in Ireland, and we think that maybe it was sacrificed to the fairies of Ireland, and so maybe that helped the Dodgers get back on track. Just saying.
You guys got mugged, and you're afraid to say it. That's okay. Yeah. dude, you guys...
Mugged by mythological creatures, yeah.
Dude, by cryptids... They're real.
Yeah.
You can study them. Leprechauns, baby. I've seen the documentary films about the leprechaun. I think that a young, what was her name from Friends? I can't think of it. She played, she was hot. Jennifer Aniston. She was in the first Leprechaun.
In Troll 2? Was it Leprechaun? It was Leprechaun.
It was Leprechaun. Yeah, documentary about that Irish leprechaun.
Right. Yeah. True story.
It's a true story. But Jesse... I love the Conforto witchcraft angle. It's the only thing that makes sense to me from a logical mind.
Right.
But you know what I really felt good about today? I was just at work and I was just thinking over this Giant series. And don't get me wrong, that walk-off Tanner gave up in game one sucks. And it's tough. I was getting a lot of texts and messages like, what are we doing with this guy? Can we just admit it's time to move on? And I was saying, hold your horses, he's got a valuable role to play. But Jesse, it made me realize how much I hate the Giants, dude.
Oh yeah.
I hate that stupid color wave. I hate the Beat LA chants. It's not a good looking stadium. It's always cold there. And most of all, dude, they don't know how to treat my boy Max Muncy with any respect in the Bay. This is just getting ridiculous. Not my Muncy, dude. Quit throwing at him. He's taking balls off the freaking hand. He's taking balls off the jaw. You know, he's taking 94 mile an hour sliders to the head. But he did have a pretty good, sweet little quote after getting hit the other night. And he goes, as of right now, we're okay. His jaw hurts a little bit. But I did get hit in the face. He played enough football growing up to know all the signs in regards to a concussion that I need to be looking for, and I don't have any of that, so obviously it's good. Sucks to get hit again, but that's baseball.
Yeah.
And, dude, if that's just not Maximus Aurelius Muncy, just being the dog that he is, he owns that town. But, man... I'm all excited about getting Muncy back in the freaking offense. You know, like I was saying, Mookie's the linchpin of the MV3. Muncy's this linchpin to the all-star group of the Dodgers. And he's just taking beanbags from these freaking Orange Devils, Jess. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, look, since coming off the IL, here's in September, to start September, he hasn't been great. He's hitting under 100 so far. Doesn't have a homer. He's 1-for-16, I believe, or something like that. 1-for-11.
He's got more hit by pitches than he does hits.
Right. But yeah, he's been hit by multiple pitches and he's has walks. So he still has a 375 on base percentage, despite having an under 100 batting average since coming back. And it's this is why I was saying Max Muncy is so important to this team. And look what the offense has done since he came back. They've been awesome since he came back, and he's not even really doing much. And that's not the point of why. I'm not saying that they're going to be great because he's going to be hitting the shit out of the ball. I'm saying they're going to be great because he has such good quality at bats all the time. And it's infectious, bro, when he's in there. Like, it makes such a huge difference for the team. That even if he gets out, you know he's having a quality at bat, making the pitcher work, and that carries over to the next hitter. Or that carries over to the hitters in front of him. Like, hey, I got to throw strikes because I know that Muncy is going to make me work the next at bat. Like, it has an impact. It makes the lineup longer. It makes it more impactful. And I think it just has a huge effect on the outcome of the output that the Dodgers offense has every day.
I couldn't agree more, brother. It's good times.
One thing about Tanner Scott that I did want to say is I do feel like he got pretty fucking unlucky in that game where he gave up the walk-off, because he did get the strikeout in that at-bat against Jung-Hoo Lee, where the umpires wrongly called it a foul ball, where it was actually a foul tip into the glove. It was originally a strikeout, and then they overturned it. It was just nonsense. So,
Jesse.
But he was unable to recover. And then he gave up the grand slam, which is inexcusable. But I did feel a little bit bad for him because he, you know, he did not have the Michael Conforto, which, you know, helping him out that game. No, that's for sure. It. Yeah. So
we definitely need to get a little witchery going on
for Tanner Scott. Yeah, we needed to hire an Etsy witch for Tanner Scott for sure.
How many blown saves does he have right now? Is he at 10 or is he at 9?
He's at like 9 or 10, yeah.
I know he was at 9, but man, I don't know if that last one was 10. Can you look that up for me? Was that last blown save number 10 for him? Regardless. He's either tied for most blown saves or he has the most blown saves.
He has 9.
All right, so he's at 9. Yeah. Jesse, we have watched Tanner Scott now blow, I think, like 4 what would have been wins for Yamamoto, most notoriously, and honestly, what will mark his Dodger tenure this year until we get some playoff baseball under our belt, blowing Yamamoto's no-hitter. But Jesse, I just feel like as somebody with an eye for the dramatic, somebody who's worked in Hollywood with you, big guy, doesn't it feel like the story is just kind of writing itself and that Tanner Scott is going to come up with a major save in a playoff game on the back of a Yamamoto start? I'm calling it now, brother. Put your dollars on this. A Yamamoto going to have like maybe a 7-8 inning gem, right? And who's going to come out for the save? But old shaky legs Tanner Scott to come put the nail in the coffin and solidify that he's back, dude.
I love it. And it's going to be like a 1-0, 2-1 win, something like that. Like, yeah, the Dodgers offense can't help Yamamoto per usual. Yep.
Per usual, dude.
Tanner Scott's going to come in and save it. I love that. I absolutely love that. I do have a hypothetical question for you. And, you know, this is just for this is a little bit of fun here.
Okay.
So Tanner Scott and Michael Conforto have not been Dodger fan favorites this year. They've been basically kind of they have been the what do you call it, like the black sheep of the family.
Yeah, they have caught the ire of Dodger fans. And to put it in a close third, Kirby Yates. But
that's true. We'll leave him out of this for now, but you know, Tanner Scott got the big money, you know, so I think we have to put him in this conversation. So here we are. We have a battle. It's like the 9th inning, tie game, Tanner Scott coming in against Michael Conforto. Who you got?
Dude. Oh, man. Just like, oh, man. I think we know the answer to this, dude. Mm-hmm. Michael Conforto is going to get a check swing strike three call that should have went for Scott. It's going to be called a drop ball. Going to get another pitch, and Conforto is going to walk it off, dude.
Right.
I think that's what's going to happen.
That's fair. So he strikes out and homers in the same at bat.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the correct answer.
That's the kind of season. And it's not because, even though I believe in Conforto, and I think he could be a Trojan horse for this Dodger offense in the postseason if he continues, you know, to take these good ABs. But I just think that Tanner Scott has had one of the most cursed baseball seasons we've ever seen from a reliever.
Yeah.
And, dude, it's hard to say that it's not like watching somebody go through the yips right now. I'm not saying we're there, but boy, does it feel adjacent.
Like somebody placed an Etsy curse on Tanner Scott.
They're only going for $16 a pop, dude. It's a value.
No, it's true. But I agree with you, dude. Like, and I've said this before. The Dodgers are, they need Tanner Scott to be great in October.
Yeah.
Because the Dodger bullpen has some serious flaws. Tanner Scott is a part of those flaws. No question about it. But we know that the talent is there. We know what he can be when he's on his game. And we've seen bits of great stretches from Tanner Scott this year. He's just had really bad stretches as well, and in big moments. It's more noticeable because he's been the closer, where I think it would be less of an issue if he was used in like a seventh inning role. But I do think that the Dodgers will need Tanner Scott these playoffs, and we have to get behind him and root for him, because the Dodgers need him for the bullpen to be great, basically, because you know, the bullpen is probably one of the most questionable things. Blake Treinen has not looked awesome since coming back from his extended absence. You know, he's been having a little bit of issues finding some his control, mechanics.
Yeah, definitely some control issues.
Yeah.
Kirby Yates, even in some cleanup opportunities, you know, with a big lead, is still giving up a couple runs, which has been frustrating. So I know there's a lot of Dodger fans just kind of saying, like, why aren't we just running, you know, some combination of like Bonda, Vesia, Treinen to close it out, you know, or to get us there? And I'm like, you know, I like that idea, I guess, in theory, but you can't do that every night, and you can't do that, you know, multiple nights in a row in the postseason. You got to take advantage of matchups. So we need guys, you know, like Kopech to start, you know, dialing it in, figuring it out a little bit.
Kopech's been awesome, by the way. Like, he has a 1.69 ERA since this season. His whip is a little high, but he's been great.
I saw him the other night, and he had a little bit of control issues and got pulled, but didn't give up any, you know, runs, I don't believe, or hard contact, but I think he had a couple walks.
You know who's been amazing?
Who's that?
Edgardo Henriquez. I mean, this guy is the future closer of the Dodgers, I think. I genuinely believe it. I mean,
he can throw a breaking ball for a strike.
Yeah, I know, but like, even that, Brandon, he has a 1.8 ERA with a 1.07 WHIP. His stuff is so ridiculous, and I think that he could genuinely be a future closer.
I really like that.
When he figures it out, or even like next year when the Dodgers just give him a little bit more runway. So he's still so young and raw, but he's great.
There's somebody else that I'm actually excited about, and I think will be playing a bit of a bullpen role, dude, and that's our old friend Andrew Heaney. If you'll remember, we got him off waivers, I believe, from the Pittsburgh Pirates. But as you'll recall, Jess, we made a trade for Brock Stewart from the Twins for James Outman.
Yeah.
He's got shoulder inflammation, and doesn't seem like he's going to be back in September.
No. I just saw he is making a rehab appearance today.
There we go. Love to hear that.
I just saw this. Brock Stewart was cleared for a rehab assignment. So he's starting a rehab assignment. So
love that. Love to hear that. But I'm still saying, our old
I understand what you're saying. So you think Andrew Heaney's going to be a fucking playoff hero? Is that what you're saying?
I think crazier things have happened, dude. I've seen David Freese be a damn playoff hero, dude.
You know who could be a potential bullpen option for the Dodgers?
Dude, tell me.
little gentleman by the name of Roki Sasaki. Could potentially be a I don't foresee this happening, but he did have a recent rehab appearance where he was throwing in the high 90s. He threw like 99, 100 miles an hour a few different times. It's probably the best he's looked since going on the IL and doing his rehab stint. I don't think it's going to happen, but how would you feel about Roki coming in and potentially fulfilling a bullpen role for the playoffs, for a bullpen role when the Dodgers are in the playoffs?
Jesse, no, I don't like it. I don't like the idea of it. I haven't seen any success in the major league level. I'm not ready to experiment in the postseason. That's not a shot at Roki. I really like him. I think he's got all the arm talent in the world, and I think he's going to really surprise a lot of people next season. But I don't think this was the year for him. I think, hopes were high, but it is what it is. We're really late in the year. And, one great rehab start doesn't make me confident enough to say, hey, he's going to work out of the pen for the first time this season and be effective. That's why I'm excited about a guy like Andrew Heaney to help it out. But Jess, there's another pitcher who I think is making his playoff argument this big series against the Phillies. And that's right-handed pitcher Emmett Sheehan, who has been absolutely fantastic for the Dodgers this year. I would believe that his role is pretty much, or his spot on the playoff roster is pretty much cemented. But I think this is going to be his opportunity to say, like, hey, man, maybe I should be the fifth starter, or maybe I should be the fourth and not just like a swing man or whatever. And, dude, he's got the stuff to make it happen. I think Bonda is getting the opener start. But, yeah, it's Sheehan's game. What do you think, dude?
I mean, Sheehan's been like the unsung hero of the team this year, just in terms of what he's given with his opportunity. He's been fantastic. He's been excellent. He pitched great in his last start, and he's making a case for himself to be a starting pitcher in October. I don't see him being starting any games in October when you consider Yamamoto, Glasnow, Snell, Shohei, Kershaw. I think it's more likely that he is a long relief guy that would potentially come in, like if Kershaw only goes four innings, Sheehan comes in. But I think there's an argument for Sheehan to potentially take that role over Shohei if they decide, hey, we're not going to use Shohei as a starting pitcher in October. I think that they have a good problem on their hands where they have plenty of options available to them that they can rely on effectively, because really, really, really good starting pitcher.
And I know I'm kind of coming out of left field like, hey, Emmett Sheehan starting in a postseason game, that means maybe something went wrong. I don't think so. I just think that, there's a few wrinkles with the Dodgers pitching staff that, Yamamoto's not good on 5 days rest. Shohei hasn't been stretched out all the way to like seven innings. Kershaw's been a short innings guy. So there's a world where I see like, okay, maybe there's like a weird lineup for a game five or six or something, and we got to get an Emmett Sheehan starter.
Here's where I think it would happen. It would not happen in the wild card series.
Exactly, but that's what I'm saying. Dodgers might go into the wild card,
It could happen in like Dodgers are in the wild card series, and then Yama can't pitch on like 5 days rest, and then so potentially they would have like Sheehan come in, game one scenario. You know what I mean? There'd be weird things. Or if Yama pitches game one of the NLDS. And then, he would have, they win in four games, then maybe Sheehan would pick. There are different scenarios where that would happen.
I'm actually getting fired up just thinking about it, because that is the strength. Like you said, that Dodger bullpen is the chink in the armor, right? That's the Achilles heel of this team. But if they line it up right, their starting pitchers pitch the way they're supposed to, and this offense, you know, can give you a couple runs, you only need to pick up about six outs, and
well,
these guys can do it.
It really depends on what they plan on doing with Shohei or Kershaw in the playoffs, yeah. Right? Because if Shohei's only pitching three or four innings, is it worth pitching him in the playoffs? Or do you do a let's line it up Shohei and Sheehan in one game? You know what I mean? Shohei for three, a lefty for one inning, and then Sheehan for three after that. You know what I mean? Like that's potential that I could see happening. So either way, nothing but love for Emmett Sheehan and what he's done this year. Because he's been a huge part of this team. I mean, just been awesome.
All right, as a blue collar guy myself, I love that. Going to work, doing your thing. love you, Sheehan.
The Phillies are in town, and Walker Buehler is making a return to Dodger Stadium tonight. He's joined the Phillies, so they are in town, and this feels like it's probably going to determine the Dodgers' playoff seeding 100%. This year, because they're 4.5 games back right now. Of the Phillies for a potential bye week, bye round, whatever you want to call it, basically a guarantee into the NLDS. The Dodgers probably have to sweep the Phillies in order for that to be a reality, or they'd at the very least have to win the series, or you can basically kiss the bye week goodbye. Is the bye week important to you, Brandon? Do you think that the Dodgers need the bye week? They won the World Series last year with the bye week, but it's also been a huge point of contention with some fans saying that it's potentially like a bad thing for a great team.
Man, it's one of those things. I think if we talked about it last season, maybe I'm speaking from a point of privilege where the Dodgers have won the division with 20 games, you know, and whatever. Not that that happened in 2024, but, you know, 2023 and the years past. It's like, hey, man, like, let's just get to the postseason as quick as possible. Some of those teams haven't showed up, right? To answer your question, I do want the bye just because this team has had so much injury. But like I said in the beginning of the episode, dude, I think the switch has been flipped. I think after that loss in Baltimore, I think the Dodgers kind of had a what the hell are we moment and have woken up. So I don't think it really matters, dude. I don't think it matters if the Dodgers get the bye or not. I think they're going to be a real damn tough team to beat in October in whatever round that they make their first appearance. But let me tell you, I hope they get the bye. That's just me.
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, that would mean if the Dodgers don't get the bye, they'd have to play the Mets have moved back into a playoff spot, but they were they were really on a fucking downfall there. But they've moved back into a playoff spot right now. So it would be potentially against the Mets, Padres, or the Cubs, or the Giants, if the Giants are able to Giants or Diamondbacks, by the way. Diamondbacks are only half a game back of the Giants right now. So one of those four teams. And, I mean, if the Dodgers had to play the Padres in a three-game series, best of three, wow, that would be a nightmare. But, they would play as the team with the best record of the non-bye week teams. They would play the team with the worst record of the wild card teams. So if that makes sense. So whoever has the worst record of the playoff teams that make it, of the wild card, the Dodgers would play them in the first round of the wild card round. So now that would be the New York Mets.
Who are hanging on by a thread, Jeff. Yeah, I think they're up a game and a half on the San Francisco Giants. Two games on the Arizona Diamondbacks. Who even thought those guys were still alive? I didn't. But Jesse, who do you think will go down in history as the bigger collapse if one of these teams don't make the playoffs, dude? The Yankees or the Mets? Both teams are on the outside looking in, dude, at wild cards. So who knows? Anything can happen.
No. The Yankees and the Mets are both in right now.
No, I know, but they're both not playing great baseball.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, so both teams are sort of in similar situations. They're both a game and a half up of a playoff spot.
Yes.
You know, dude, the Astros are in some dark water right now too, by the way.
Dude, you see the freaking Rangers are creeping on them.
Yeah, they're two games back of the Astros. So, I would say it's got to be that's a good question. I think it's got to be the Yankees because they were in the World Series last year. And I think that most baseball fans see that the Mets maybe are more of a long-term project than the Yankees are because the Mets have Juan Soto locked up for so long. You know, they're more of a long-term project with Steve Cohen at the helm with all the money that they can spend. Fans, I think most baseball fans are smart enough to understand that they're going to be making a big splash in free agency. You know, maybe they'll be in on Kyle Tucker. They might be in on like Dylan Cease or Michael King or some of these top pitching free agents out there. I believe Framber Valdez could potentially be an option for them as well. So I think that the Mets will be in on all of those things. The Yankees, like the Aaron Judge era, it has a clock ticking on that. He's 34 years old. He's no spring chicken, Brandon.
Whoa,
you know,
Boomer.
Yeah. So, the Yankees, if they aren't able to make the playoffs, would be a monumental, maybe not a collapse, but a monumental failure by the organization. Whereas the Mets, I think, are a bigger collapse. The Yankees would be a bigger failure.
Ooh, I like that caveat that you just threw in there. And you know what? I think I completely agree. I think that this would be a bigger, collapse, running ragged, right? That the Mets spent all this money, had this great playoff run last year, and just don't even get a wild card berth. But you're right, the Yankees retooled. They were in the World Series. They believe that they are the best organization in baseball. And if they come from just, you know, a couple games away from winning it all last year to not even making a wild card berth. I mean, you sign Max Fried, you get Jeffers, Jeff from the Brewers, and you get Bellinger, and you do this whole retooling, and they're only a game and a half up crazy right now.
So just to sort of put a bow on this, like, this is kind of all like a hypothetical here, because the Yankees, as of right now, according to ESPN, have a 99% chance of making the playoffs. The Mets have an 80% chance of making the playoffs, whereas the Giants have a 9.6% chance. So it seems like in all likelihood, both teams will make it. But, you know, it's still fun to speculate. And I do think that the Mets would be a bigger collapse, Yankees bigger failure. Anyways,
well said, yeah. That's my favorite blue collar take.
We're gonna wrap, but we do have one quick thing to talk about here, because you know, you and I, the way that we met each other, you know, we were both we were both working in news. We were cameramen, so we knew what it took. We knew the necessary things that you had to do to get the big shot. You know, you're working as a camera guy, you're working in like the scrum of the media, you got to get the big shot, and you work hard, and sometimes there are like consequences and occupational hazards of the job, and you get bumped around by other reporters, and maybe you fall down, and sometimes that happens, but you have to have, you know, respect for your peers around you, and you know, make sure that, you know, everybody gets their little piece of the pie, everybody's happy. Ken Rosenthal, MLB reporter, he's been around a long time. You know, I don't know if he's forgotten that he is a journalist and a reporter, because he has become kind of like, I'm not going to say he's the Woj of MLB. I would say Jeff Passan holds that mantle, and maybe that's weighing on Ken Rosenthal in a big way, giving him a little bit of a Napoleon complex, but. Ooh. Ken Rosenthal was at the Milwaukee Brewers game over the weekend and bumped into a cameraman during a post-game Gatorade bath celebration and knocked over a camera guy who was a Brewers team photographer, I believe, or a team cameraman. knocked him over, and then stood over him like he had just posterized him in an NBA game or something, and shook his head, looked at the guy with disdain, like he was a total inconvenience upon him, and he did apologize for it today. He went on foul territory and apologized for the way it looked, and said that they would have a laugh about this the next time they saw each other. And then he blamed it on the fact that what did he say? It was because it was live TV and he had to conduct the interview. And you know, I want to get your take on this, but it's really not that big of a deal. But I do feel like this is what happens when journalists are achieve fame. People get to, it's not your job is not to be a celebrity. You know, your job is just to conduct an interview. He kind of came off a little bit like he was big leaguing this guy. You know, like he was above him. And it just really didn't sit well with me, only because I've done this job. I know what it takes to work in this environment. And I just felt like it was a little bit unprofessional of a response by Ken Rosenthal, where it felt like he was inconvenienced by a guy just doing his job, you know?
100%. That's definitely like, you know, looked like a media photographer, maybe a team guy, yeah. Who knows? But he got bumped. Like you said, Rosenthal looks down at him, and the look says it all, right? I mean, it's, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you there? Like, that's like this isn't my fault. This is on you. And yeah, dude, you do have an obligation to get the interview. That's why you're there. But the guy just got a Gatorade bath. He's not going to say anything to you for another 5 to 15 seconds. You know that.
Yeah.
What's it take to just reach your hand out and help the guy up?
Yeah.
Have a little giggle and like go, hey, you know, things get crazy on the field, and you're back to it. I mean, that's the professionalism that I think you were referencing, Jesse, that it literally takes nothing. Like, I've been a musician my whole life. I've played big gigs. I've played bar gigs. I've played gigs at just, you know, the other bands and their girlfriends.
Yeah.
But dude, like, just so it's in me just to give a little clap anytime I hear like a street performer, busker, it doesn't matter. Because it cost me nothing. And dude, to your point, it would have cost Ken nothing to, even if you react that way, like, oh, fuck. Like, just to go have like that wherewithal of like, oh, well, that's my peer on the ground. I'm going to help you up. You see big leaguers do it all the time. Somebody slides into second. They feel, you know, they fall weird, whatever. Somebody helps them up, you know, whatever. Yeah. I do think it was a bad look. I do think, Rosenthal's getting pretty flamed for it, and rightfully so. But I mean, I've never broke bread with him, so I don't know if this is actually like an accurate representation of his personality. But Jesse, you and I have both been behind a camera a long time, and you know when somebody's looking at you like that, it's coming from a place of like earnest contempt.
He looked at the guy like he didn't like you can't breathe the same air as me. And it's not, I'm not saying that's who Ken Rosenthal is as a person, but like when you see an athlete, how many times do we see like in football games or in basketball games where the athlete bumps the photographer, knocks them down, and then they don't reach a hand down to pick them up? They kind of look like jerks a little bit, right? But at the same time, you think to yourself, but they're the athlete, they're playing their game. It's not really their job to help the photographer. Like the photographer, no, this is their job. Like they're in the middle of a game. They have other things.
Yeah,
to worry
you can
about.
Forgive it in that moment because you go, this professional is locked in, and I, as a professional, am just observing. Yes. So hey, I got in the way. I don't want that to happen, but whatever. But like you, but that's not what it was.
Ken
right?
Rosenthal is not the athlete in this scenario. He is the reporter and a journalist.
What you're saying is that, you know, he was acting as the subject, and
he's acting like he's a celebrity.
Yeah,
almost,
dude. Like,
you know?
You're not the subject of this interview, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
and it just it rubbed me the wrong way. It didn't look right to me. I'm sure he regrets it now because, like you said, he's getting flamed on the internet. But you know, I wish he would have like had a little bit more like reactions in real time matter, dude. Like the way that you react to something in real time does say something about who you are. And because, you know, instincts say, you know, ultimately guide a lot of our decisions in life, man. So if you're not able to have those instincts, like, hey, this was an accident. By the way, that camera guy was laughing when it happened. Like, oh, it's okay. He didn't care. Ken Rosenthal was the one who cared. You know, so, and he's not even the one who fucking got knocked down. Yeah. It just didn't work for me. So I didn't like the apology. I don't know, whatever. We'll see.
I feel you.
But you know, Jesse, let us know what you guys think. Is Ken Rosenthal too big for his britches? Does he have Napoleon complex?
Oh,
or is it just
shit.
A misunderstanding? Let me know.
And Jesse, in the immortal words of Chumbawamba, I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never going to keep me down.
Yeah. We got knocked down for 3 weeks, but we got up again. We did another episode. You're never going to keep us down, baby.
That's right, baby. Yeah. As always, we are your boys, the blue collar boys of Deferred Collusion. With me, as always, my king of Ireland, the Emerald Gem himself, Jesse Rowe, me, your boy, Lord Paramount of the South Bay of Los Angeles, Brandon Bullringer. Jesse, this was a fun one. It's great to be back. We're making that final headway into the postseason, bud. We got to up our content game.
We will. We're going to up the content game. And, you know, I know that this is way too late to say, but if you're still sticking with us and you're still and you've rode along with us this whole way, please make sure you like, comment, subscribe, send to all your friends, share with your baseball buddies, whether the Dodger fans or not. We don't care. Bring on all the nasty comments. We love it. And
we love it. And, you know, we're just going to be out here working on our casual strike three calls.
Let's see it.
No, he did not. He did not swing. That's me as a first base umpire after the umpire checks out of me. Did he? And I just go, he didn't swing.
No swing.
Very safe call.
Cinema.
But that's the kind of professionalism you get here. But Jess, until then, Daddy-O, I will see you, Space Cowboy. It's been a blast.
Absolute cinema.